the director of National Intelligence Office would like to speak to you, David Sims.
I'm like, finally, I'm getting an award.
For being intelligent.
I knew at some point they'd give me my intelligence award. Where would you like for me to direct my intelligence, Director of Intelligence?
You're listening to the Help Me with HIPAA podcast, where HIPAA and humor collide to make learning fun. Your delightful hosts are Donna Grindle and David Sims. Relax. HIPAA help is on the way.
Hi, I'm Dee Dee Dunlap from Perkins County Health Services in Grant, Nebraska, and you're listening to the Help Me with HIPAA podcast.
Welcome to episode 306 of the Help Me with HIPAA podcast. My name is David Sims of HIPAA for MSPs and Security First IT. And joining me is Donna Grindle of Cardin. Welcome back, Donna.
I'm so happy to be back, David.
So did you... Did you leave anything in Hilton Head, or did you just paint the whole town red?
I left my voice, apparently. It's coming back. It's going to show up later today, I feel certain.
Yeah.
But that anybody that's listened over the years knows that that's a frequent problem of mine when I go to conferences.
Yeah. So trust me when I say she runs her mouth a lot.
I do a lot of things.
She's always talking. It's so funny. So well, you sent
mostly
me
I'm laughing really, really hard at a lot of things. People are cracking me up, and I'm laughing.
Yeah, I'm glad to see that people are getting out and doing the live events now, and you can kind of tell like people are more chipper.
Yeah. Yeah, and we were on Hilton Head Island, so we were also sitting out by the beach, which will make you chipper.
Yeah, it will. So it's funny. I had
great fun.
I had a meeting last week, and we were in person, and this lady stood up, and she goes, "You know, I used to dread seeing you folks, but I've missed you."
Well, there you go.
I was like, yeah, okay. So anyway, in today's show, we're going to be talking about HIPAA and UFOs.
Yeah, because that's what we would be doing if we were left to our own devices.
And so, unfortunately, that was the pre-show that you are not going to get privy to. The craziness that happens before we hit record. But no, in today's show, we're actually going to be talking about something a little more mysterious than that, which would be... the new cyber executive order that's come out.
Yes.
And, Donna has read that because she loves bathroom reading and pulled 6 points out that we're going to discuss in this new cyber executive order. And, you know, people in our space are looking at this and what does this mean for us? And what is it going to do? And what's it going to change? And, you know, we've been saying there's got to be something coming because it's getting, I don't say it's even getting, it is already bad. And it gets worse. You know, as we're recording today, we learned that a major insurance carrier paid $40 million for a ransomware. I'm sure I'll call them settlements. Ransomware settlement.
They negotiated down to $40 million.
Yeah. $40 million. That's crazy. So it's bad. It's bad out there. So there just has to be something, and I don't know. We've talked about this numerous times about where does the motivation come to start protecting yourself to the same extent that people are willing to attack you?
Well, you know, we're starting to get companies that let's just say they're not even remotely tied to healthcare.
Mm-hmm.
But they do business with the big companies. Now, between 50 and 100 employees, not a huge company, but they provide a valuable service, clearly been in business a while. And now they're having to fill out those questionnaires coming from the bigger companies.
Mm-hmm.
And they're sitting there looking at me, well, I don't have time to do this. And I was like, I've been listening to that for years. You know,
yeah.
There's plenty of doctor's offices that are your size and smaller that have had to figure out ways to do this. It's just part of doing business today. And you've got to find ways to do that. And, you know, we know how to build those today from having done it. But you can't just say, oh, I'm just going to outsource it, and then magically I'm going to suddenly be cyber secure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, one thing that we talked about in the previous episode was how we thought that the insurance industry might be one of the things that pushes people into that. And and this week, I actually got an email from somebody, and they're like, we need a security risk assessment. And so I'm like, okay, let's talk about what kind of security risk assessment, because, you know, you and I both know that's a term that gets thrown around loosely, especially in the technology world. Yeah. And so we had a brief discussion about, do you want something that's more HIPAA security risk assessment? Do you want IT risk assessment, cybersecurity risk assessment? What are you trying to do here?
Yep.
And honestly, my first thought was they've had a breach and they don't want to say anything about it. That was my first thought. But I later found that they're trying to get cyber insurance. And so that kind of proves our point that the insurance industry and what they're asking people, especially when they start looking at getting cyber coverage, it's going to push people to start asking questions. Like, do I have this? Am I doing this? I don't know. What are my vulnerabilities? What are my risks? And then maybe they'll start taking these things seriously. So I'm encouraged by that.
Well, and you'll see it with this company that I talked to this week. Yeah, we do HIPAA, but we've been telling you this is coming. It's coming. And they're like, well, we want to do NIST compliance. And I'm like, well, you don't do NIST compliance. Well, we just want to get a NIST certification. It's not really that easy to do what you think it is. It's not what you think. And, you know, but trying to, at least I spent some time, and the guy really wanted to learn.
Yeah.
But if we can't get people in healthcare understanding this stuff, it's a lot of work coming our way.
Yeah.
To get every single business. And that's what we need to talk about in this. There's some interesting stuff in this executive order, and it's a ton of stuff that you and I have been talking about for years that we're going to have to do.
Mm-hmm.
So there really wasn't anything super surprising. It's just that there's some urgency behind it. I wonder why.
I can't for the life of me figure that out. Yeah, it's I went to a business meeting Wednesday, and part of the thing is you have to introduce yourself each time. And so I introduced myself and my company, and I said, does anybody have any questions as to whether ransomware affects your life at this point? As you're all wondering if you're going to put gas in your car this week.
Yeah.
And they're like,
a laugh.
Yeah. Yeah. And everybody's like,
a very uncomfortable one.
It was like, when are you speaking next? Can you do something on ransomware? Yes. Yes, I can.
Oh, that's great. All right. So you want to touch on we could mention the boot camp, but we only got a couple. I mean, we have to decide where we're going to cut off.
Yeah.
We have never been this full this soon. So it's a new place for us to be, which.
Yeah. The only time this has ever happened is when I went to a buffet.
Yeah.
And I got full quick. But anyway.
Ba-dum-bum.
If you want to know more about the HIPAA Bootcamp, go to thehippabootcamp.com. This last one of the year is going to be August 17, 18, 19. If it is full, we will tell you so and put you on the list for the next one. If it is not full, then you
can. We don't know if the next one's going to be virtual. It may be time to do one in person here in the spring or something. But yeah, we haven't even thought about that we now need to come up with dates for 2022 boot camp. I don't know.
Yeah, don't make me get in the corner and start rocking back and forth. I'm not ready for that yet.
Yeah.
Still trying to get through this year and recover from last year all at the same time.
It's insane. But it's all good. It's all good, especially when our businesses look at what's happening in this executive order.
Mm-hmm.
So, you want to hit it or not?
Let's hit it. So, thought number one you've got down here. point number one.
Oh, gosh.
What are you laughing about?
just where I am so tired. And then you were like, oh, okay. We're in for a ride, folks, trying to talk about this stuff. So,
Yep. So, anyway, so your point, number one, was that the policy statement itself has some interesting and important things to note.
Yeah. I saw a few articles like the top four things or this or that, and they were talking about the specific line items. But to me, in the policy statement itself, just like we were mentioning a moment ago, these are things that I don't recall ever truly being at play in a directive for all of us. It starts with, the United States faces persistent and increasingly sophisticated malicious cyber campaigns that threaten the public sector, the private sector, and ultimately the American people's security and privacy.
I don't know why, but I had to laugh at that sentence. Because my first thing I'm looking at is going, why didn't it just say Americans' security and privacy instead of the American people's?
Well, apparently sometimes people don't know what we're talking about. I don't know. That's a pretty common government thing to say. The American people, blah, 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 blah.
I guess because, me being from where I'm from, we often say those are my peoples. Yeah. And so it just came up whenever I read it. And I was like, somebody from the South must have wrote that.
Yeah. It's my people. But it goes on. It talks about the efforts to deter, protect against, detect, and respond. Sounded like identify, protect,
sounded like a NIST thing, doesn't it?
Sounded like an IPDER moment. But the discussion, takes you right down. That's what we have to do. And then it says about, after it's talked about the government and major cyber incidents and lessons learned and all this stuff, then it says, but cybersecurity requires more than government action. Protecting our nation from malicious cyber actors requires the federal government to partner with the private sector. The private sector must adapt to the continuously changing threat environment, ensure its products are built and operate securely, and partner with the federal government to foster a more secure cyberspace.
Yeah, just reading that, I'm going, what does that mean?
It takes everybody.
Yeah.
It's not going to be something. Anybody can be your last line of defense or your weakest link at any time.
Mm-hmm.
It takes everybody. So it is trying to look at the big picture and not a piece of it. And then this was the one where I'm like, okay, we've said this too. Incremental improvements will not give us the security we need.
Mm-hmm.
Because we're behind the eight ball here.
Yeah.
What did and you probably also- the 9, 10, and 11.
The 11 ball.
I thought you'd like that.
did you catch the shot across the bow for the supply chain folks though?
Yeah, which part?
Ensure
there's a lot in here.
The ensure its products are built and operate securely.
Yeah. Well, when we get down to that whole section and it covers on that, it's really intense. So first of all, it says incremental is not going to cut it. We got to be big and bold. Which, again, we've been saying, if you'd been doing this stuff all along, it wouldn't be that bad. But because we haven't, we're going to have to jump. You can't just say we're going to have a secure facility, but we're going to start with a shed and we're going to take our time. Can't do that.
No, it's time to gut it and redo it all.
Yeah. Or at least get serious about building it.
Yeah.
But and it adds on there, the scope of protection and security must include systems that process data, information technology, IT, that we always talk about, and those that run the vital machinery that ensures our safety, which is operational technology, which falls under, the pipeline and the water systems and the power grid and HVAC and all of those kind of things. often people don't realize we worry about those too.
Mm-hmm.
I mostly worry about keeping them away from my systems. But it's all getting integrated. So the final statement says, it is the policy of my administration that the prevention, detection, assessment, and remediation of cyber incidents is a top priority and essential to national and economic security.
Mm.
And it's just like you said, does anybody now think that ransomware is not going to impact your life?
Yeah.
It's a serious problem. Cybersecurity is not just somebody else's problem.
Yeah. It's not just a good idea anymore.
Well, and when they find out how this got in there, what are the chances of somebody fell for phishing or it's in the supply chain?
Mm-hmm.
Something along those lines. And I think that it's going to be big when all the news comes out about exactly what happened with this, and it will have to come out.
Oh, yeah.
On the pipeline thing. So yeah, I'm glad to see these kinds of statements saying, let's don't play around. Let's don't put some patches on a leaky. I don't know if you were, well, I'm sure you aren't old enough to have played in one of those little pools that looked like a giant inner tube with a piece of rubber tied to the round it. So now you're in a kiddie pool. And ours had little pieces of duct tape all around it as it would start to deflate. We can't do that. You know, we've got to get this going.
Mm-hmm.
So the policy itself, very positive as far as what we believe, we've been saying we needed for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
Then it goes into information sharing contract updates. I don't know about you, but I mean, there's a lot of legal stuff in contracts, and we hear a lot of discussions in our 405D committees where we're talking about information sharing and the importance of it and how do you build that in and get it in, everybody involved. And contracts always come up about how contracts won't allow us to share information.
Right.
I also think that a lot of people are hesitant to share information because they don't want the truth to come out.
No.
And we both know that that absolutely happens. Maybe there is a contract. Maybe they're hiding behind a contract, pointing at the contract so you don't look at behind, you know, don't look in the closet where I crammed everything.
Mm-hmm.
But this directive about updating the contract says all the lawyers and cyber people in all the different departments, they have to get together and figure out how to make it possible for better information sharing while still maintaining the confidentiality of the information we have to have at moving around the government.
Mm-hmm.
And one would think that they could work that out, but certainly not something we know the details of. And, you know, our lawyer friends, feel free to shoot us an email with all the stuff that you know is out there that we don't worry about.
Mm-hmm.
But if you work with the government, and many people have governmental contracts, small companies, check out some of the specific items that it says the contract language and requirements shall be designed to ensure that, and then there's a bunch of stuff. So I just pulled out a few interesting statements. Ensure that service providers collect and preserve data, information, and reporting relevant to cybersecurity event protection, detection, response, and investigation on all information systems over which they have control. I thought that was very specific there.
Mm-hmm.
That's called having evidence. What does that mean?
Prove it.
Can you prove it?
Yep.
Got to prove it. Service providers share data, information, reporting as they relate to cyber incidents or potential incidents relevant to any agency with which they are contracted. So they share the information, data, information, and reporting, cyber incidents or potential incidents. Now, we got to define that potential because we go through that crap all the time.
Yeah.
A scan or a ping, those are happening constantly. I need to know. I don't want to be inundated by that stuff. So hopefully the right people will be involved, because it is saying not just the lawyers, you know, not just the people in between lawyers and actual cybersecurity people, but the CISA actual cybersecurity people. And they need to be in consultation with, now imagine being in this position, David. I am a 70 people company, and we have experienced a potential incident, and we're going to need to consult with the Secretary of Defense, the Attorney General, the Secretary of Homeland Security, and the Director of National Intelligence if they deem it appropriate and consistent with applicable privacy laws, regulations, and policies.
Mm.
I can imagine you when they say, the Director of National Intelligence Office would like to speak to you, David Sims.
I'm like, finally, I'm getting an award.
For being intelligent.
I knew at some point they'd give me my intelligence award. Where would you like for me to direct my intelligence, Director of Intelligence?
Oh, and there we go. I told you this was going to go all over the place. Okay. Ensure that service providers collaborate with federal cybersecurity or investigative agencies in their investigations of and responses to incidents or potential incidents on federal information systems, including by implementing technical capabilities such as monitoring networks for threats in collaboration with agencies they support as needed. I.e., you're not going to be able to hide things. You're going to have to just give over data and let people know when something squirrely's happening and you haven't figured out what it is yet, so you're keeping it quiet.
So you mean to tell me that people actually have to monitor their networks?
Yeah, and pay attention to what's going on. So, you know, and that gets back to the statement about any systems in which you have control over.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so now I don't have control over my cloud providers, but guess what? The cloud providers do, and they're all going to, you know, they all have contracts with government.
All right, so somewhere. Here's your slippery slope. Let's slide down it together. How about organizations where they have a very distributed workforce and potentially the employees, you know, they do the BYOD thing. So maybe the employees are buying their own computers or laptops and they're working from home. I mean, how do those fall under all this? Because it sounds like those need to be monitored. They need to, you know, they fall under that same classification.
I think we're at the point where the BYOD has had its joy.
I agree, because I've even from the beginning, I've always said that's a bad idea.
Yeah. Well, the businesses saw it as great. They could expand their technology and not buy the devices or manage the devices. And I don't think a lot of them realize how much that has saved them over the years or how much of an opening that's created.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And we see this a lot with phones mostly. Like not necessarily with computers and laptops and all that, but
really the whole work from home thing.
Well, we've seen it lately, but you know, historically it's not been that. It's been the phones, and those provide even bigger issue. You go in, mm-hmm. and you're like, yeah, you know, congratulations, you got a job here. Oh, by the way, we want to install stuff on your phone. So mm-hmm. you're like, no.
I don't want you. Well, the people who are like, well, I don't want you monitoring my computer.
Yeah.
Even the business owners that MSPs, well, you don't need to monitor mine.
Oh, yeah. I get that question a lot, which is, what exactly are you monitoring? And I'm like, don't worry, we're not looking at the porn sites you're going to.
You're absolutely right. And I think that's, we're really going to see the end of BYOD, and businesses need to get that in. You know, these are business costs.
Mm-hmm.
So you've got to realign your expectations around technology plans and those kind of things. I think a lot of businesses are slowly getting there, particularly in healthcare, but it's going to require more and more businesses to get there. because they've relied on their employees buying their own technology, which didn't happen back in the day when the technology was real expensive.
Mm-hmm.
You know. And the last one on the contracts here that I made a list of, ensure that service providers share threat and incident information with agencies, doing so where possible. Now, this is the thing that I thought was interesting. In industry recognized formats for incident response and remediation.
Hmm.
That's what I said. It's going to be interesting to see what they determine is the industry recognized formats. But again, one of the big points of the use of the NIST cybersecurity framework was that everybody that used it had the same vocabulary.
Right.
You know, you're not like, oh, wait, what does this mean to you? Well, here's the definition.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's hugely important. And none of those are small things. And to ensure are in the requirements. And add to that, that little damn more other language about, you know, stuff that would be in the contract requirements. Information and communications technology service providers. That sounds like something you might do, David. I don't know.
Yeah. There's questions around, you know, what is the definition of a service provider?
Yeah. But basically they're saying it's everything. And there are some definitions included in there to clarify that. But the bottom line is, if you're doing any kind of information technology, communications technology, so all of you phone people that think it doesn't apply to you, mm-hmm. time to get over it, because we've been saying this for a while. Maybe we should just go, we need to come up with a phrase that means that's more interesting so that we don't have to say that's what we've been saying. You know, we'll come up with our own phrase. I don't know what it's going to be. If you've got some ideas, send it in. You know, we DD'd it or whatever.
We DD'd it.
But it says any of those providers entering in a contract with the agency must, here's the language, promptly report to such agencies when they discover a cyber incident involving a software product or service provided to the agencies or involving a support system for a software product or service provided to the agencies.
Mm.
That says SolarWinds.
Yeah.
You know.
Define promptly.
Yeah. Promptly and a support system. So there's going to be a lot of that.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing that's really interesting to me is throughout that whole list, within 90 days, within 45 days, within 120 days, I mean, it's loaded with short time frames to get this stuff done, which I found quite interesting. We'll see, though. But, you know, at this point is when I realized that a lot of people don't understand, you know, the digital world we live in, it's just like you said, throw it out and build it again.
Mm-hmm.
It's so new. Cybersecurity world, I mean, was cybersecurity even on the list of things you could become an expert in, you know, 30 years ago? No.
Oh, absolutely not.
You know, 20 years ago, it was something people were starting to talk about. So this is not something that we've had systems for. So imagine that when we started having planes flying around, have you ever seen those graphs of how many planes are flying around the United States at any one time?
Yeah.
You know, on September 11th, that was really a shocking image to see all the planes and them trying to figure out what was a friendly plane and get all the planes on the ground and watching how quickly that occurred.
Yeah.
Well, imagine that is what they're trying to do, is to get to the ability we have that level of understanding of what's happening in our cyberspace and where is good traffic and bad traffic and being able to find it. But we're just going to start with all the planes are already in the air. And by the way, last year we threw up a whole bunch of planes that are covered in dust and hadn't been checked in years and years.
Mm-hmm.
And now David Sims is now the FAA. Y'all need to tell me who you are.
Yeah. Yeah. And you got a lot of people flying planes like, I have never done this before.
Yeah. Or I got this. Oh, yeah. Wait. Does anybody know how to land?
Yeah.
Does anybody know what to do if that propeller stops spinning or that starts smoking?
Yeah.
And that's where we are. And now suddenly we're going to try to understand that and make sure that we protect everybody up there.
Yeah. And the other piece of this, talking about cybersecurity and how much it changes. I mean, there is not, that I know of, any other type of education or information that you can follow that changes as rapidly as this does. I mean, mm-mm. it is so crazy fast. And, you know, years ago, you used to see the commercials on TV where somebody would buy a computer and on the way back from the store, they'd see the sign on the highway for the new computer. And like, it's already out of date as soon as you bought it. And there was,
I know that happened to you.
I mean, there was a time when technology moved that quickly. It's like you would buy, you know, you'd buy a 433 megahertz processor and literally 4 weeks later, a 466 megahertz processor was out. And you're like, oh, yeah. Man.
Yeah. It was, what is that law where it doubles every so often and now it's gone like incrementally out of control?
Is Occam's Razor? I don't know.
We'll have to look it up.
But there was that time in technology years ago where it moved that quickly, and then it finally stabled a good bit. But with cybersecurity, it's even worse than that. It's like people are coming in and they're like, okay, I've identified what I need to be doing, and I've got these things in place, and I'm good. And 2-3 years go by and they still think they're good. And like, dude, you've went through multiple lifetimes.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah. That's where everybody wants it to function like a car.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it just can't. And this is why doing these types of assessments, we talk about HIPAA risk assessments, security risk assessments, all these things, you know, doing them annually is the bare minimum.
Mm-hmm.
And this is another reason why we keep saying things like, don't just make it one big event. Every single time you have something that's changing in your environment, do a mini SRA for that particular thing. Otherwise, you're going to get to the end of the year and you're like, oh, now we need to do this big, massive thing called a risk assessment. And nobody's got time for it. And it just gets pushed back and pushed back and pushed back. Where you should be doing those things as you go. And by the way, I would do them beforehand. Don't put technology in place and then start asking questions.
No, please don't do that.
The number of times I've been brought in and we need you to consult on something. Okay. And then the next statement is, we did this now. And I'm like, wait a minute. So you just want me to tell you how you can continue doing the wrong thing and make it right. I don't know that I can do that. But anyway, so bringing IT in early just to have the conversation. Look, we're thinking about doing this. What is this opening us up to? What risks are there? What vulnerabilities are there? What should we be thinking about? What questions should we be asking?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I understand this slows down the process because, you know, God forbid it takes more than 5 minutes to have this conversation because you're trying to, you know, roll something new out and make money on it. But... You know,
yeah, I understand you don't have time, but you really don't have time for it to go bad.
Oh, God, yeah, yeah. I had somebody ask me the other day, they want me to pull something up, and I was like, hold on, I got to enter in all these codes and 2FAs and all that. And she said, isn't that such a pain? And I'm saying, my response was, not nearly as painful as what happens when things go bad.
Exactly. That's the way, you know, we just go, security's not convenient. Rule number two.
Yeah.
Rule number two, we should just say, rule number two, rule number one, rule number three, rule number one, security is not convenient, security not optional, and it shouldn't screw you up. Rule number one, two, and three. There you go.
That's it.
And it's Moore's Law.
Moore's Law.
Moore's Law.
I was close.
Yeah. Yeah. Tracer. I'm like, I know that ain't right. I got to really look at that.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. So.
Anyway, number three. Zero trust adoption, which I started using this after my divorce.
Well, We actually, at some point, are going to have to do a whole episode trying to explain zero trust in theories and how that, as best we can, how that works. Right. But for years now, I don't know how many years I've seen it talked about, but ultimately, this would be the way to secure everything, is to assume that all traffic is bad traffic and should be evaluated. Mm-hmm. And it has to prove it should be allowed or it follows things. And that involves a lot of artificial intelligence where it literally is watching for behavior analytics and those kind of things, looking for traffic to do naughty things.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of assuming that if they know a password, that's good enough, then I can let them do whatever they want.
Yeah. Just think of it like your home. You know, you don't let everybody come in your home and then go, okay, who shouldn't be here? Let me see.
Mm-hmm. Who's doing things I don't like?
Right. You don't do that. You have a zero trust environment in your home. Only people that have the code to the door or the key to the door or whatever, only those people can get in.
Or that you open the door and allow them in. You don't just leave the door standing open because you're not there.
Yeah. Or you don't do like we do down here in the South when somebody rings your doorbell. You have no idea who it is and you just yell, come on in.
Door's open. But it is truly the way that we have to start looking at it, is that everybody is a potential problem. And like you said, if we let everybody into the house and then try to figure out, well, okay, who did that in the bathroom? Because we're going to need them to go.
I think there's a story behind that statement somewhere. And that was a little too specific, Donna.
Yeah. There are stories and it involves friends from college. But at any rate, the idea that everyone has to be cleared at the door is not something new. You know, we get carted at the door going into places and you go through the detection and all of that at the airport. Well, you need to do that on your computer too. So this whole zero trust adoption is huge for it to be put in as a directive for federal systems.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's just, and first of all, I don't disagree. A lot of these ideas, I look at them and I'm like, yeah, I see this problem or that problem. If you could truly make it work where it doesn't violate rule number 3 of security requirements, that it makes it inefficient to do your job, then I'm all for it. But again, this is somewhat new in as far as being out in the wild. But as we said, the whole thing is new.
Yeah. And, you know, it brings in other issues too. Like most of the time when you're talking in IT, you're talking zero trust, you're talking about like application whitelisting. And we talked about this a little bit when we talked about the SolarWinds hack and how if you whitelist an application, but then the application is part of what brings in the bad stuff.
Yeah.
Now you've got an issue because you said it was okay to bring that in. Mm-hmm. Application whitelisting in and of itself is a good thing, even though I think at the time on that episode, I was like, no, don't whitelist it. but I think what I'm trying to say is if you're going to whitelist applications, you still have to have them go through some type of vetting process or something that ensures that that application or that update or patch or whatever isn't itself a problem.
Interesting you say that, because item number 4
is
software supply chain security. Bleh. But do we need to say, I mean, zero trust, there's a lot to it, but it is saying they must adopt security best practices, advance towards zero trust architecture,
mm-hmm.
and accelerate movement to secure cloud services, including SaaS and IaaS and PaaS.
So a lot of asses.
I know. I gave it to you there. Just nice, pretty fastball down the middle. All right. So the folks that have been proponents of this for a while must have thrown a party when this thing came out.
Yeah.
But this one is the one that's near and dear to our heart, the software supply chain security. There's no surprise here. We said stuff's coming, especially we knew it was coming. Solar winds simply accelerated everything times 1,000. And then we add the pipeline.
Yeah.
So those two things. But the point that it starts with is the development of commercial software often lacks transparency, sufficient focus on the ability of the software to resist attack, and adequate controls to prevent tampering by malicious actors. There is a pressing need to implement more rigorous and predictable mechanisms for ensuring that products function securely and as intended.
Yeah, that's just a longer version of what I said.
Exactly. Exactly. It's, well, it's just like I talk when I work with the lawyers. Here's what we need to say. It's two sentences, but I know you're going to need to turn it into a full-page letter.
Yeah.
You put all your lawyer language around it. So, but to me, a big part of that is, you know, when I was starting out in development, you went through a rigorous control process that you developed, you tested, there was quality assurance, it went round and round. There was, and somebody years ago came up with the agile development concept because we needed to move faster. We needed to get software out. We needed to get updates out. And it took the idea that there should be a balance between rigorous controls and need for speed. So they were just kind of like, well, we're going to start throwing it out there when we think it's reasonably good, and we'll deal with the problems on the back end. Well, that was fine till now. Yeah. You know, that starting, there's a problem with that, which is it's opened up all these vulnerabilities. So we're going to have to find a way. And we already see that those that jumped way into the agile thing are kind of backing off a little bit to say, we got to find that balance. So it's going to need to happen, but this is going to make it happen.
Mm-hmm.
Funny thing, in April, NIST released a guide defending against software supply chain attacks. They got it out. And by the way, this whole thing is loading NIST up on work to do. So if you're interested in this stuff, I feel like NIST may need to be hiring. That document opens up by saying this document provides an overview of software supply chain risk and recommendations on how software customers and vendors can use the NIST Cyber Supply Chain Management CSCRM and the Secure Software Development Framework, the SSDF, to identify, assess, and mitigate risk. And I started sending out the SSDF to a lot of our clients that are software developers to say, you guys need to start implementing these things and showing that you're doing these things because it's coming.
Mm-hmm.
Well, guess what? NIST just got told to do a whole bunch of things, including the thing to find ways to encourage people to use those things. So I'm pretty sure people are going to be telling you to do it. Now, I can't imagine they would start from scratch again unless there's some reason that they've got competing standards and all that, because that always happens. But I would say if you have or a software developer, you don't have that thing out looking at it, might want to do that like right now, like post haste, like pause the podcast and go. But definitely know that the developers need to work with that, and they need to use some of the SCRM stuff, the Software Supply Chain Risk Management, SCRM, that is out there to vet your supply chain and know that everybody's going to start vetting you with those same guidelines.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a new one out by the military called the CMMC thing that you have to do if you're in the military. That's already being implemented, which it's on my list of things to try to explain because I think it's another piece You know, it says here's basic level one, you meet basic cyber hygiene. Level two, you a little bit more advanced, all the way up to where you're supposed to be. So it's a pretty handy tool, another that's freely available. But a few of the requirements in the list were performing audits and enforcement of these controls on a recurring basis. Now, the controls are being able to maintain accurate and up-to-date data, provenance, and then it makes sure it says origin, of software code or components and controls on internal and third-party components, tools, including the tools you use to develop with, and the services in your development processes. That's a lot that they don't account for now. But we've been pushing, you know, you got to account for these things. Providing the purchaser a software bill of materials, i.e. here is everything that's in here, and a vulnerability disclosure program, and then attesting to conformity with software, secure software development practices. So meaning all you folks, you're going to have to start attesting.
More attestations.
Yes.
More checking then, the box.
So, and then it points out the NIST CSCRM, so the Cyber Supply Chain Risk Management Guides. Mm-hmm. And then we've talked about it before and keep trying to get back to the updates to HICSCRM, which is the healthcare-specific guide that is designed for small and medium healthcare organizations. So if you aren't familiar with those guides, pull them out after you do the SSDF.
Yeah.
So, and we're going to do more on those guides, but it has to do with vetting the vendors because it's got to happen. You know, I'm already trying to figure out, well, at what point do I switch over our vendor vetting process to ask more of the HICSCRM questions than we ever have before? Because we cover a lot of those things, but there's more to it.
Mm-hmm.
So that supply chain stuff, get up in there. We've been saying it's coming. This is no longer trust us, it's coming. This is the definition of the things that we've been saying. Whatever that new, that's what we said, phrase we're going to come up with. We're going to DD it. But, and then we got number five, establishing a cyber safety review board. I read that and I'm like, whoop. Almost like the NTSB for cyber events, which was a perfect tie-in with my analogy about the planes. When the planes crash, the NTSB comes in. When there's a big train wreck.
Yeah, just like that sentence you just said.
I know, it was a total one. You know, they come in and they evaluate so that we can learn and repair or identify where the failures in the systems were. Because we have those systems in place to protect people and industry and our national security for a reason. And I think we don't have to go into why you have those, but we're going to get a CRSB, baby.
Yep.
They called in the CRSB.
CSRB.
There you go. And instead of the giant hangar where there's all these parts that they're reviewing, there's six people in a room, in a dark room with monitors everywhere. Don't go in there. But that is got a long process that it'll have to go through to create it, but it has to have representatives from CISA, FBI, NSA, public and private sector professionals, to investigate major incidents. If you just paid $40,000, $40 million, I am so done. $40 million, you can expect to get a visit from the CSRB.
Mm-hmm.
And then the final one I just wanted to point out was standardizing the federal government's playbook for responding to cybersecurity vulnerabilities and incidents. It's going to make everybody do it the same way, so we're all speaking the same language, because up till now, you know, every agency built their own because we were all doing it as we went. And that's a big issue, is there's not any real standards. And this can really impact national security and economic security and privacy and all those things. So these specific playbooks, and what is it, David, that we cover in the boot camp? The need for
documentation.
A specific ransomware playbook. We start with that.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, look, I've already lost him. See what I mean?
Sometimes it's hard to follow you, but
I know.
I'm talking about
playbooks. So I thought we were talking about playbooks. But anyway, this directive says in 120 days from the date of this, which is what, last week?
Mm-hmm.
They will come up with a standard response that covers all the NIST standards and appropriate guidelines and includes requirements for improving detecting vulnerabilities and incidents on federal systems, investigating and remediation capabilities, and some specifics on nothing in there is supposed to mess up national security.
Wow. You got 4 months. Make it happen.
Yeah. Standardize all just the playbooks for responding, that alone. And NIST is supposed to be involved in all of these. So just like we're involved in the public-private task groups for the 405D and the hiccup stuff that we do, there's going to be more involvement there. And I can seriously see, you know, where we started with this whole hiccup thing, you know, with the Recognized Security Practices Amendment to high tech, and now we're going to have this, that we're going to have, they're going to be asking us to show up for more stuff, David, and we're going to get pressured more.
Mm-hmm.
But that's okay. I can take it and say no, right?
Yeah. You know, this is one of the things that we hear often when we're talking to healthcare providers. Are like, you know, I don't like the fact that government's making me do these things and they're telling me I've got to have all these controls in place and all that. And now you're looking at it, oh, this is going to roll out everywhere.
I know.
And so you almost want to look at the medical field and go, you guys should be sitting back now going, we've been doing this for years and we're good. What are you complaining about? But instead, there's still a lot of them that are like, oh gosh, now it's more stuff I got to do that I'm probably going to balk at.
I know. Just do your stuff. Just do your stuff and lay low.
Yeah. So,
but no.
But to quote you, we did this long ago. Because, matter of fact, I think one of our episodes in the past was called HIPAA for Everyone.
I know. Yeah.
This is what we're talking about. You know, eventually this is going to come. And this is not going away. This is just the beginning.
Yeah.
So it's not the end of the story. It's the beginning of the story.
Yeah, because these are things that you can't go backwards on. Because if you do, I mean, well, look what happens. We haven't gone forwards on them.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's in things like this. Here's the fun part is I don't know how they're going to figure this out, but things like this have to move at a much, much faster pace in order to keep up with the cyber threats and vulnerabilities.
Yeah. And we're seeing how that works on 405D.
Yeah. I mean, we're having weeks and weeks and weeks of conversation before we even start looking at putting things on paper. And then it takes more weeks and weeks and weeks of back and forth. So, you know, I'm looking at this process and I'm like, gosh, man, it takes a long time to come out with this guidance. And by the time it comes out, it's, you know, is it still even relevant at that point?
Well, I think that Eric's idea of the five threats and vulnerabilities that we've done in HICCUP is really the only way to go about this is to narrow the focus.
Yeah, you have to. The other part, too, is one thing that got brought up in a meeting was talking about actually creating playbooks. And there was discussions on both sides, but one point that was made was exactly that about speed. It's like, we can't come up with playbooks because by the time we get them out there, it's too late.
Mm-hmm.
And so we can't get specific enough to be that helpful. Organizations have to come up with their own playbooks.
And hey, that's where we come in.
Yeah. So I don't know, man. I think if you don't have somebody in your organization that's already kind of delegated this stuff to do, a compliance officer or a cybersecurity officer, a privacy and security officer, if you don't have that, then you're probably going to start looking at outsourcing that I don't think you're going to be able to get away too much longer with not having that piece in your business.
Well, and you have to accept that you can't outsource all of it.
Right.
And my explanation yesterday, I'm like, I can't know if your people really aren't in a meeting sharing usernames and passwords freely and nobody says a word.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to be able to know that. I'm not going to be able to know for sure that the policy I gave you for arrivals and departures of staff, you're actually following. You're going to have to prove those things. You're going to have what, you know, these artifacts and evidence or whatever you want to call them. You're going to have to prove it.
Yep.
The new Cardin motto, prove it.
Mm-hmm.
So there you have it.
Never have been two more powerful words spoken. All right.
Indeed.
Folks, that is our show for today. Thanks for listening. Remember to share this podcast out on your favorite social media site and, you know, rate our podcast. We appreciate it. Give us a review. We always need your help to spread the word. And as always, remember for Donna and myself, that HIPAA is not about compliance. It's about patient care.
You've been listening to the Help Me with HIPAA podcast, hosted by Donna Grendel and David Sims, the show created to help you with HIPAA. For more information or to ask us a question, visit our website at helpmewithhipaa.com. Neither Donna Grendel or David Sims are attorneys, and they do not offer binding legal advice concerning regulatory compliance. The information in this podcast should not be relied upon or construed as legal advice in any way. Consult your attorney for legal advice concerning compliance with HIPAA regulations.